Okay, so we're reading from Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, verse 20. I'll read the Sanskrit first.
Gunan etan atitya trin dehi deha samud bhavan janma mrityu jara dukher vimukto mritam ashnute.
And the translation for that is, when the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life.
Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada.
How one can stay in the transcendental position, even in this body, in full Krishna consciousness, is explained in this verse. The Sanskrit word dehi means embodied. Although one is within this material body, by his advancement in spiritual knowledge, he can be free from the influence of the modes of nature. He can enjoy the happiness of spiritual life even in this body, because after leaving this body, he's certainly going to the spiritual sky. But even in this body, he can enjoy spiritual happiness. In other words, devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the sign of liberation from material entanglement, and this will be explained in the 18th chapter. When one is freed from the influence of the modes of material nature, he enters into devotional service. In other words, devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the sign of liberation from material entanglement, and this will be explained in the 18th chapter. When one is freed from the influence of the modes of material nature, he enters into devotional service. So we'll start off with just some prayers to get the blessings of all acharyas.
Om Jnanati Birandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priyai Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Ripa Sindhu Bhyayavacha Patita Nam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. So I'll just repeat the verse in English again, just to remind ourselves what the topic is today. When the embodied being is being able to transcend the three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. Hare Krishna. So first of all, I'd just like to ask for the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas and all the senior members of the congregation that are here today. I'm not really qualified. I'm probably younger and much junior to many of you. So I feel a little bit humbled sitting here and speaking from the Bhagavad Gita to all of you. So please give me your blessing so I can speak something relevant, something to inspire all of us today. So the topic today we've been given is the three modes of material nature. The word mode itself, I don't know if you're aware, it's actually a translation of the Sanskrit word guna. When we refer to the three modes in Sanskrit, it's normally the three gunas. And guna literally, it's itself, means rope. So what's the purpose of rope? I'll try and be a little bit interactive because I get tired of my own voice, so please try and help. What do we use rope for? Very simple question. To tie something or to bind something. So this is actually what the three modes is. It's actually, it's implied, just from the translation itself, it's an implication that it's something that binds us. And what we'll discuss is actually how the three modes of material nature bind us to this material world. Every one of us actually, somewhere along our life, we've been searching for some form of freedom. We always want to be free in some way. I know when I was younger, I thought when I could get older, I'd get my independence, and therefore I don't have to obey my parents, I can do whatever I want. That was my thinking when I was younger, that when we get older, then we'll become a lot more free. But then, of course, you realize that as you get older, more responsibilities come upon you. And so the freedom that you might have had, you know, once upon a time, you realize that actually it's not so much freedom as you thought that you would have. Srila Prabhupada explains, gives an analogy that freedom today is like a tied bull. You know, when a bull is tied, he can move up to a certain point, but then he can't move beyond that. So that's almost, there is some freedom for us, you know, because Krishna has designed this material world in such a way that he gives us a little bit of freedom. But then we actually are bound and certain, and actually that's often that when we get frustrated, so many, has anybody been frustrated before? Yeah, I see everyone nodding. Okay, good. It's not just me then. So we get frustrated from time to time. Why do we get frustrated? Because we have unlimited desires, but when we try and fulfill our unlimited desires in a place that's limited, then we can't fully get to that stage. And because of that, we feel frustrated. So like that, there's a story of a father and a son. Once a father was teaching his son how to fly a kite. And the son was watching how the kite was flying so nicely, but then he said to his father, that don't you think the kite would fly even nicely if we cut the string? Then it would have complete freedom to do whatever it wants. And the father replied, he said, actually, son, this kite can experience most of its freedom when it's actually tied to the string. So the son was a little bit bewildered, and he thought, that doesn't make any sense to me. So he said to his father, I don't agree with you. So his father, just to iterate this point, actually cut the string of the kite. And very soon he saw that the kite started going all over the place. And a few minutes later, the kite came and fell on the ground. And then some car came and ran over the kite. So his father explained that, see, when it was tied, it was flying everywhere, but it was doing what it was supposed to do. But when we cut the string, then, you know, that level of freedom, the kite actually wasn't able to do what it's supposed to do. So in this sense, I thought this example is quite valid, because it shows that actually, if we understand what the three modes of material nature are, and we work in harmony, and we understand actually what our goal of life is, and how we can actually get the out of the three modes of material world, then understanding it with proper knowledge, then that's good. But when we try to just suddenly think, actually, I'm going to do whatever I want, I'm going to act very independently, I don't care what happens, then just like the kite, we get a lot of frustration in the world, we get a lot of unhappiness, and things don't always go our own way. So this is the topic of today, the three modes of material nature. And it's a very, very important topic. Bhagavad Gita itself is made up of five main themes, or five main subject matters. Does anybody know? Has anybody else, anybody here read the Bhagavad Gita? Very few people have actually read. Okay, we've got a few hands going up. Has anybody read some of the Bhagavad Gita, if not all of it? Okay, great. It's so important for us, for those of you that haven't perhaps read the whole Bhagavad Gita, it is extremely important for us to go through this, because just like whenever you buy any piece of equipment, or, you know, nowadays, I'm quite a little bit technical, and I know any little gadget that I may buy, it comes with a manual. And often, you know, I don't want to read the manual. I just want to pick up the gadget and do whatever else, whatever I think I want to do, and try and learn my own way. And then later I realize that actually I may have learned some things, but, you know, more than half of its functions I never actually got to know, because I did it speculatively. Whereas if I look at the manual, then I can go through every bit of instructions that's given in it and I can understand exactly what this device is for. So similarly, Bhagavad Gita is explained that it's like a manual for all of us. That we may think we know what we can do, but until we've read the Bhagavad Gita, we don't truly know 100% what the purpose of life is and what the function of the human body is. And therefore, I encourage everybody here today, please, please, if you haven't read the Bhagavad Gita, you make it your New Year's resolution. I know last year, the New Year's resolution, when the first Bhagavad Gita class was given, was that if everybody read 2 verses a day, which will probably take about 5 or 10 minutes, if you read just 2 verses a day, then you could read the whole Bhagavad Gita in 1 year. Is that a lot to ask? No? So maybe that could be your New Year's resolutions. If you haven't read Bhagavad Gita, that maybe you can just read 2 verses a day and that will be enough for you to complete the whole Bhagavad Gita in 1 year. So the three modes of material nature. Krishna has dedicated a whole chapter. Chapter 14 is completely on... Okay, thank you. It's completely on the three modes of material nature. And not just chapter 14, he actually continues this theme in chapters 17 and chapters 18 also. So he's given a lot of emphasis to the three modes of material nature. And so we're going to touch on a few things about the three modes of material nature. So before we start discussing too much about it, who here knows what the three modes of material nature are? Perhaps those who've read the Bhagavad Gita. Yes, Mataji. Ignorance is one of them, yep. Passion and goodness. Thank you very much. So you've passed your test. So the three modes are goodness, passion, and ignorance. And actually all of us have these three modes and we're all working under these three modes. So what do you think, even if you haven't read the Bhagavad Gita, just generally speaking, what do you think someone who is purely from the, who comes across as somebody in the mode of goodness, how do you think that they would behave? Somebody who's in goodness. You can take a guess. It's okay. It doesn't matter if you get it wrong or anything. Somebody in the mode of goodness, how do you think that they would act? There must be somebody who's a little less shy. Good. Very good. Yes, they'll act quite good. That's brilliant. Anything else? Okay, not so interactive today. Never mind. Okay. All right, so basically, I'll just go through them. Somebody in the mode of goodness, generally it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that some of the symptoms perhaps that somebody in the mode of goodness may have is a lot of knowledge. If you have a lot of knowledge, then generally you're going to act well in life. Also a sense of bliss, satisfied, just in terms of behavior, very good behavior, selfless. All of these qualities are perhaps in somebody who is working and acting in the mode of goodness. Mode of passion. What do you think somebody in the mode of passion, this is an easy one. Sorry? Jealousy? Yeah, jealousy could be coming through from somebody who's acting in the mode of passion. Because if they don't get something that somebody else may have, then that could result in jealousy. Anything else? Okay, so the mode of passion is generally somebody who's got some intense longing, intense desire, and they're working very, very hard to try and fulfill their desires. And that could be seen as somebody who could be very greedy, somebody who's working very, very hard, working all hours of the day, maybe someone like an investment banker because they have to work so hard to try and, make their living. Otherwise, they won't be seen as their colleagues who putting in 12 hours a day or whatever. So just someone who's in very passionate behavior and will do anything to get what they want. So that's could be somebody who's in the mode of passion. So what do we think that somebody in the mode of ignorance will behave like? I hear some whispers, but I don't know if anybody can say a little bit louder. Mode of ignorance? Okay. No response. Okay. So, generally it's explained that somebody in the mode of ignorance, as you may have actually assumed or maybe thought just now, is probably somebody who sleeps a lot, very much, you know, in illusion, doesn't care about anything, may act very foolishly, a madman perhaps. All of those things generally are considered under the mode of ignorance. So that's just to kind of put some sort of idea in your mind about how these modes may, perhaps we can, you know, how we can relate to on a day-to-day basis. If we don't fall necessarily under this, then you certainly will have seen people who may be very prominent in these type of behaviors. But generally, it's explained that we all have these goodness, passion, and ignorance within us. Okay, so how do they, my next question, and the next thing I want to cover is how do they work? So, it's, before we discuss that, it's extremely important to understand who we really are. So often we forget the fact, and that one of the first things talked about in the Bhagavad Gita is that we're not this body, but that within this body, who we really are is a spirit soul. And that soul is giving consciousness to the entire body, and because of that, we're actually, you know, we can, you know, feel, touch, do all these things with this body. So the soul is extremely and completely spiritual. It comes from the spiritual world, and it has actually nothing to do with this material world. However, when it comes into the material world, then it gets conditioned. And because of this condition, it acts according to the three modes of material nature. Once, I just remember a story actually, once Srila Prabhupada was taking a morning walk on the beach. And one of his disciples said to Srila Prabhupada that, he said that the ocean, it looks so beautiful. If we look at it from a distance, we can see how the waves are so beautiful. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. He said, from here, they look very beautiful. But wait till you're in those waves and then see how beautiful they really are. So the point he was making that while a lot of things may look very, very attractive, when we become entangled in that, then we can see what it truly is for how it behaves. So similarly, that's the reason why we're actually in the material world. That as a spirit soul, we were once upon a time in the spiritual world, but we saw something that we thought looked very attractive, which was the material world, and we decided to experience it. And so we decided, so because of that, Krishna fulfilled our desire, and we came down, abandoning Krishna, and we came down actually. And now we're in the position we are. And we see that everything is limited, everything is temporary, and this world is, it has some element of happiness, but it's very, very limited, and it's very temporary. Happiness comes just as quickly, and it goes just as quickly. So it's very important to know. So why is it that we are so bound by this illusory energy? Why is it that we're so stuck in the material world? This question actually was asked by a very powerful king once, King Janak, Maharaj Janak. And he asked to a sage. Generally, back in the day, the kings were actually very, 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 very intelligent. And so whenever there was a saintly person within the kingdom, they would inquire submissively from that person and learn and get true knowledge. These days, we don't seem to want so much knowledge. But back in the day, a lot of people, you know, especially kings, one of their responsibilities was to make sure they had enough knowledge so that they could rule the kingdom properly. So King Janak asked this question to the sage within his who was in the kingdom at the time. And he said that, why is it that we are bound by this illusory energy? That we think that, you know, we are free, that we think that there's so much happiness in this material world. So how is it that we're bound by this question? And the sage started laughing like anything. And then he walked out of the kingdom. So everyone was like, what's he doing? You know, we've asked a very good question. I don't know what he's doing. So everyone started following the sage as he walked out. And then the sage walked out, and just outside the kingdom, there was a big tree, a big, big tree. So the sage hugged the tree. And then he hugged the tree and he said, please, let me go. Please, let me go. Please, let me go. And so everyone was bewildered that the sage is holding onto the tree and then he's asking the tree to let him go. And so the king said, my dear sage, it is you that is holding onto the tree. So if you let go, then that will happen. And then the sage started laughing again. He goes, now you understand. This is our position in the material world. That because of our attachment, because we want to enjoy this, you know, we want to enjoy and we want all this pleasure in the material world, that's why we're stuck. But at the same time, you're asking this question, that why are we, you know, in this illusory energy? Why are we bound? So he goes, it's only because of our own sense gratification and forgetting the relationship with Krishna that we're in this position. And because of that, we're struggling. So the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Okay. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. They're basically, the way to think of it almost is that they're three categories that describe the primary characteristics of this material energy. So just like if you've ever done art or you know an artist, then you'll know that they make so many different colors from three primary colors. I think it's red, yellow, and blue. Am I right? Red, yellow, and blue. So from these three colors, they can get hundreds and hundreds of different shades of different colors. So very similarly, this material energy is simply comprised of these three modes. But they work in such a way that they create so many different actions. They make all of us here are individuals. We're all completely different from one another. We do completely different things. Yet it's the three modes that are making us act in this way. Does that make sense? Okay, good. So like that, the three modes are always working in such a way that that they'll make us do different things. And they're always working in such a way that one mode is generally slightly more superior than the others. And based on that, we'll conduct a certain action. So sometimes we may feel charitable. All of a sudden, we may not be a very charitable person, but one day we feel charitable and we think, ooh, that's not like me. But that's actually when the mode of goodness may be more prevalent. Or other times, perhaps in the evening when we generally come back from work, then all we want to do is put our feet up, watch telly, and we don't want to do anything else. Right? We feel a little bit lazy. So that may be that the mode of ignorance is more upon us at that time. It's explained generally that the early hours of the day, from something like 2 in the morning till about 9 in the morning, is generally when you can be in the mode of goodness the most. So you see a lot of people amongst devotees here, we have a morning program which starts at 4:30 in the morning and it goes up to 8:30 in the morning. Also, if you practice any devotional activities in your home, or you may see your grandparents waking up early and doing their pujas and various other things early in the morning. So this is the reason, actually, because the mode of goodness is most prevalent during the early hours of the morning. And then from 9 to sort of 5, 6 o'clock, generally the mode of passion is more prominent. And then the evening hours going into the evening, the mode of ignorance is acting more upon us. Nowadays, actually, in Kali Yuga, we see that goodness is becoming more and more less, isn't it? Because as soon as we have holidays, what time do we wake up? Does anybody wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning in their holidays to chant and do these things? Most of us don't do that these days. So we see that in the mode of goodness, in Kali Yuga, goodness is becoming more and more less. Passion and ignorance is more prevalent. So it is up to you if you want to do something about that and make a change in your life. So they're always competing with one another. And so it's good in one sense that if you know what activities are considered in the mode of goodness, then perhaps you can do those activities and make the goodness come out more within you. Now, I've been talking a lot of theory, a lot of what's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, and sometimes we may think, well, some of it I can understand, some of it I don't necessarily understand. So what I've done is I've picked certain things that we may all be able to relate to. And I want to ask you, all of you, if you'd be willing to just respond to some of these things, what you think about some of these things. So the first one I have is... is food. Who here likes food? Just a few people. Ah, there we go. Okay, so everybody here likes food. So food, for example, is explained in the Bhagavad Gita that food can be in the mode of goodness, mode of passion, or mode of ignorance. Okay, what kind of food do we think are in mode of goodness? Sorry? Vegetarian food. Okay, so vegetables, fruits. Yeah, anything else? A little bit louder. Tasty food, yep. Tasty food, sweet.
Succulent food, yeah. Natural food, yeah. Motive good. Yeah, so some very good answers there. So it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, foods that come under the category of goodness are those that are nourishing, sweet, juicy, palatable, satisfying, pleasing to the heart. Those that increases life, or it gives you strength, grains, milk products, fruit and vegetables. So those type of foods are considered in the mode of goodness. What about passion? What kind of food do we think that will induce more passion? Spices, specifically? Chilies, okay. Yeah, definitely give you a kick. Chocolate, yeah, possibly. Sweets, depending on what type of sweets, that could be under goodness as well. Yeah, okay. So, okay, typically the kind of foods that are considered in the mode of passion are things that may be too bitter, maybe sour, salty, pungent, hot. It may cause pain or cause some diseases to the body. Those type of food are generally considered in the mode of passion. Okay, so coming on to ignorance. What kind of food do we think come under ignorance? You guys look intelligent. Come on. Non-veg? Yep. Absolutely. Yep, non-veg comes up every time. But yep, generally food that are tasteless, that may be stale, putrid, decomposed, unclean, that may be cooked days ago or something. Meat, fish, eggs, alcohol, all of those things are actually considered in the mode of ignorance. Almost said goodness there. Mode of ignorance. So those are, just to give you an example, that's kind of, you know, we can see how these modes are actually acting in our life. Coming next onto charity. Now you would think that charity is something that you're doing out of your goodwill. But charity also can come under the three modes. So I'll briefly, we're running a little bit out of time, so I'm going to maybe just go through some of these things. So charity in the mode of goodness. Okay, so in mode of goodness, you've got charity that's performed willingly as a duty at the proper time and place and to a worthy person with no expectation of return. So you're doing it very selflessly. It has to be a very worthy cause. Charity in the mode of passion. It's something that's performed to get something in return, like honor, with desire for fruitive results or in a grudging mood. So you may not want to do it, but your friend will be like, this is a good cause, give me something. So, oh, okay, fine, you know. Or at work, sometimes they do so many charitable events, and then you sometimes don't want to give, but you still, because everybody else is giving, you feel like, I have to give. Or you may do it to look good. So those kind of charities, if you're doing it, then those are under modes of passion. And then ignorance is when it's performed at an improper time and place to an unworthy person. Could be like you may be giving it to a drunkard or a gambler who's just going to use the money to do more of those things. And generally, you don't really care where it goes. You're just kind of doing it very without any care, but very ignorantly. So those kind of things come under ignorance. Now, it's explained that people who act in the mode of goodness, when it comes to, you know, when it comes our expiry time and it's time to pass on, then people who have acted in the mode of goodness generally will go to heavenly planets. So if you've been very pious in your life, then in your next life you're going to go to a pious place in the heavenly planets. Those that act in the mode of passion, and you've been living your life in completely in the mode of passion, then that those people actually come back to earthly planets. So you probably just take another birth in a human form, not necessarily always in a human form, but generally in a human form, and you just do more of those things. And those that are acting in the mode of ignorance, they'll go to lower planets, so hellish planets. They may take birth in animal kingdom or take birth among ghosts and spirits. So very, very powerful, actually, that how important these modes are and how much importance it is for us to understand what we may be acting within. So then we've discussed the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. Which one is the best? Mode of goodness? Is that the answer? It's a bit of a trick question, actually, because Prabhupada explains that all three modes are bad for you.
And I'll explain a little bit. We can see how from passion or ignorance, it can be quite bad. But generally, people get confused when we talk about goodness, how it's bad. So Prabhupada gives the analogy that imagine that you're in a prison. Okay, you're a prisoner, and then you have three types of chains. You know, the prison officer comes and he says, I'm going to bind you, but I'm going to give you three types of chain. One is gold, one is silver, and one is bronze. Okay, which would you like? So, which are we going to choose? We may choose the gold one, thinking, oh, that's the best one out of the three, but it still doesn't defeat the purpose. We're still going to be bound by those chains. So similarly, in goodness, we may think that we may be very, very happy if you're in the mode of goodness, or we may have a lot of knowledge. But what that can cause is actually that can cause attachment to that very position. We may think that, oh, you know what? I've got a PhD in the best of anything, and I know the best of everything. And when we get in that mood, then pride comes, and all of those things kick in. And because of that, that stops us advancing anymore. Similarly, in the mode of goodness, if you're too happy, then again, you will think that I'm satisfied. I don't want anything else in life. So forget God. I'm happy where I am. And so again, in this way, mode of goodness can also bind you a little bit. So Prabhupada explains that actually all three modes are bad for us. But out of the three, goodness is the better one out of the three of them. Because once you get in the mode of goodness, then actually you may be able to, only in the mode of goodness, you may come into contact with devotees, you may come to the temple and you hear more, and that's the place to advance from. So Prabhupada uses the analogy that, you know, if you want to take a plane which is going to elevate you and take you higher, you have to first go to the airport. So the mode of goodness is a little bit like that. We first have to get to the mode of goodness. Once we get to the mode of goodness, doesn't mean that we stop there. Then we have to advance further and get out of all three modes and get to the fourth mode, which is the mode of transcendental or mode of transcendence. And when we get to that mode, then we can start to really feel the bliss, real bliss, not just the temporary limited bliss that we may have. So I guess the next natural question would be, how do we develop and how do we get to the mode of goodness and beyond? So, Bhagavad Gita, one thing about, actually many things about good that about Bhagavad Gita, but one really special thing about Bhagavad Gita is that doesn't matter whatever mode you may think that you're on, the Bhagavad Gita can really help you and elevate you, go to a higher mode and higher mode like that. And so one simple practice that we practice as devotees, Prabhupada gave us the process of chanting, said you should chant a minimum of 16 rounds a day, and follow the four regulative principles, which are no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling. And it's not that by following these principles that we're best, that's it, you know, we're religious. But actually all this does is that these principles actually brings us to human form of life. You know, Prabhupada said that, you know, even within animal species, there are some species that are vegetarians. So just because you're a vegetarian doesn't mean that you're better than that. So we have to go beyond that. Vegetarianism isn't, sometimes we think I'm religious, I'm vegetarian, but we have to go beyond that. And we have to inquire. So these four regulative principles brings us to the mode of goodness. And once we get to the mode of goodness, then that is the place which we need to get to go higher than that. Once we're following the four regulative principles, the other thing Prabhupada emphasized in our daily life is the principle of chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So by chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then all the dirt that's been accumulated, all these modes that are acting upon us, all this dirt, envy, greed, all of these things are within our heart. So by chanting, we're clarifying and we're cleansing our heart. So following the four regulative principles and then chanting helps us get beyond these modes. And one other thing that you need along with those things is you need association of devotees. So it's very important that, if you come to the temple once a week, maybe it could be that you increase that a little bit. If you come once a month, maybe you can come twice a month. Whatever you can do extra, try and do that. But association with devotees means that you're associating with people who can actually help you, who are practicing this path and can give you that enlightenment to take you higher than just what these three modes give you. And the other thing which is also conducive to spiritual life is avoiding the association of non-devotees. So the people that may be inviting you to going out, clubbing, or going to the pub, all of these things, as much as you can limit or avoid these things, then it's better. There's an example that I was watching the Discovery Channel the other day, and in there they were talking about crabs. And it's really amazing, actually, because if you leave a bunch of crabs in a boat, in a bottle, even without the lid on, so the bottle is open, then the crabs cannot get out of the bottle. And the reason being is that when one crab just tries to get out of the bottle, the other crabs pulls him down. And this is what it's explained, that the association of non-devotees is almost like. People who are not so conducive to spiritual life will have a lot of envy, will have a lot of jealousy and all of these things. And whenever you are sometimes trying to advance a little bit, they'll try and pull you down. So it's very, very important that you come to the temple as much as you can. Not just to take darshan of our beautiful deities, but to associate, inquire from devotees, learn something. You know, read the Bhagavad Gita. Hopefully by then you'll be doing this 2 verses a day. So you'll have some questions, because you may not understand some of these things. So bring those questions with you, and then any one of us at the temple can try and sit with you and answer those questions with you. So I guess in conclusion, for those of you who haven't read the Bhagavad Gita, I guess the first New Year's resolution is perhaps try and read just 2 verses a day. Then as you're going on, then maybe you can look at the 4 regulative principles and try and apply them to your life if you don't already do so. And those things with the process of chanting in daily, preferably in the morning hours when the mode of goodness is most prominent, then you're advancing in your Krishna consciousness. And then when you come to the temple and you get the association of devotees, my God, you've gone beyond the three modes and you feel the real bliss. And when you're feeling that bliss, and you can speak to any of the devotees who've been practicing for a long time, that actually that bliss feels like it's just not going to end. And you feel really, really happy in your life. And who here wants happiness? Right? And who here wants happiness that doesn't just end temporarily, and also something that, not that you're going to lose when this life comes to an end, but something you can really carry on in your next life, the life after that, and the life after that. So it's like that. It's like a bank balance, but this bank balance will keep going, will keep going, will keep going, and the interest will just keep going on and on and on. So like that, that is my humble request for today. Thank you very much for those of you that participated. Thank you for tolerating me and hearing so attentively. Hare Krishna.